Welcome and thank you all for holding. I would like to inform participants that your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question and answer portion. To ask a question at that time, please press star 1. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Today's conference is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect. And I'll now turn the call over to Tom Skinner. You may begin.
Thank you, Holly, and thank you all for joining us today for this update on the U.S. government's Ebola response. With us today is the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, Ms. Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, and as well as the Director of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden. Both will provide some opening remarks, and then we'll get to your questions. Secretary Burwell.
Thank you, Tom. I want to open by recognizing the service of both patients in Dallas and all the healthcare workers across this country, both locally and nationally, that are working on the Ebola issue. As you know, yesterday we announced a number of steps to further strengthen our preparedness. This includes a call CDC hosted yesterday afternoon with more than 5,600 clinicians to discuss healthcare system preparedness and how Emory University Hospital and Nebraska Medical Center prepared for patients with Ebola and the lessons learned. We also announced that CDC would provide a go team for a rapid on-site response to hospitals treating Ebola patients. As you're aware, this morning the CDC confirmed that on the morning of October 14th, the second healthcare worker reported to the hospital with a low-grade fever and was isolated. This patient traveled by air on October 13th. Because of the proximity and time between that evening flight and the first report of illness the following morning, CDC is working closely with the airline to identify and notify all passengers who might have traveled on the flight. Individuals who are determined to be at potential risk will be monitored. Today, as part of an ongoing clinical decisions about patient care, one of the patients at Texas Presbyterian Hospital will be transported to Emory later today. We also are talking with all the specialized hospitals about their ability to accept patients if needed. I want to conclude by saying homeland security and preparedness remains our top priority. We know how to stop this. We've seen this disease since it was first discovered in the 1970s, and we have seen it stopped. We do know what protocols to use and how they work. While we've done a lot, we know that there are opportunities to do more and better, and we're doing that. Wherever possible, we're learning from our experiences and redoubling on our efforts to continue to improve processes and procedures. We're continuing to communicate and supporting implementation efforts on the ground. It's also important for us to keep focused on the fact that we need to stop this epidemic at its source. While our domestic preparedness is a top priority, we also know the best way to fully stop this is at its source in West Africa. Thank you, and with that, I'll turn to Director Frieden.
Thank you very much, Secretary Burwell. The Ebola virus spreads from person to person and can create another generation of spread in about 8 to 10 days. Every day, we assess where we are, and every day, we work to make sure that we're responding as effectively as possible. We're always open about what we know when we know it, and we'll always share more rather than less information as we work to protect Americans and provide extra margins of safety wherever possible. This is the second healthcare worker case that arises from exposure to the index patient, Mr. Duncan, who was admitted to the hospital on September 28th. We're taking a series of steps to stop the spread of Ebola, and this is going to require many partners to do their part. The second patient is ill, but clinically stable. When she developed and reported symptoms, she was rapidly isolated, tested, and at about 12 or 1 in the morning last night, the presumptive test from the Texas State Lab is positive. We believe that will be confirmed shortly at the CDC lab. As Secretary Burwell indicated, she will be transferred to Emory. We're working very closely with the hospital in Dallas to promote a safe environment for the care of everyone at that hospital, for the patients, and for the healthcare workers. We have continued with our intensive investigation and interventions to understand what may have happened and to increase safety. Our investigations increasingly suggest that the first several days before the patient was diagnosed appear to be the highest risk period. That was the 28th, 29th, and 30th. These two healthcare workers both worked on those days and both had extensive contact with the patient when the patient had extensive production of body fluids because of vomiting and diarrhea. Today, we are continuing to intensively assess the exposures of all other healthcare workers at that facility to identify how many others may have had that level of intensive contact. I will note that those days are days prior to diagnosis and prior to when the CDC team was on the ground. In terms of contacts, there were 48 contacts to Mr. Duncan before he was isolated. None of them have developed symptoms so far. There was one contact of the first healthcare worker before she was isolated. That individual has not developed symptoms at this point. For the second healthcare worker, the individual diagnosed today, we have identified three contacts at this point before isolation. Going back to the care of Mr. Duncan, there are approximately 50 other healthcare workers who entered the patient room during the time of his hospitalization. We are reviewing those and ensuring intensive follow-up of all of those individuals. We're also planning for other eventualities in case we get additional cases in the coming days. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Skinner for questions.
Holly, I believe we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Again, star 1 to ask a question. And Kate Snow with the NBC News, your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering if you could clarify anything about what these two women were doing exactly, what kind of roles they had in the hospital, and is there any indication as to how they may have become infected? Thank you.
Director Frieden, I'll turn that to you.
Thank you. It has been stated publicly that the first patient is a nurse. I will just say that the second patient, as well as the first, had extensive contact with the patient when they were having substantial amounts of both vomiting and diarrhea. The assessment of the team is that in those first several days in the hospital, a variety of forms of personal protective equipment were used. There are several ways to do to use personal protective equipment safely. It's critical that that be done consistently and correctly, and that's one of the areas of active investigation.
Our next question is from David Likowitz with Fox News. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking the call. I'm curious if you can go into some more detail how this nurse was able to get on an aircraft and not being monitored or quarantined if she had been in contact with the patient, the index patient, Thomas Duncan, in Texas.
Director Frieden, do you want to speak to that?
The patient traveled to Ohio before it was known that the first healthcare worker was ill. At that point, that patient, as well as the rest of the healthcare team, were undergoing self-monitoring, as the first healthcare worker did, resulting in her rapid isolation. The second healthcare worker reported no symptoms and no fever. However, because at that point she was in a group of individuals known to have exposure to Ebola, she should not have traveled on a commercial airline. The CDC guidance in this setting outlines the need for what is called controlled movement. That can include a charter plane, that can include a car, but it does not include public transport. We will, from this moment forward, ensure that no other individual who is being monitored for exposure undergoes travel in any way other than controlled movement. Next question, Holly.
Thank you. Comes from Arthur Delaney with Huffington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. National Nurses United said yesterday they've talked to nurses at the hospital and that they don't think any protocols are really in place or being followed there or anywhere. And I wondered if CDC would respond to that more directly than it has.
We are working closely with the hospital. We have staff there around the clock. There are intensive efforts underway to train, retrain, and supervise staff. The single most effective, the single most important way to get consistency is a site manager. And we have now ensured that 24/7 there will be a site manager who will monitor how personal protective equipment is put on, taken off, and what's done when people are in it.
I would just add two things. One is that we have two nurses from Emory who have gone to Dallas who are experts in the treatment, and they are doing peer-to-peer training to help that issue with regard to the nurses. I think the second thing that I think is an important thing is we hear and understand with the nurses, their concerns, and want to make sure, and we are doing a lot of communication. The call that I mentioned at the beginning with clinicians, we'll be doing another call from HHS, from our Assistant Secretary for Preparedness, and Dr. Mary Wakefield, who is a nurse herself, a senior leadership member here at HHS, call with nurses. In addition, I would say one of the things that's just so important is frontline healthcare workers, whether it's those healthcare workers that are in the emergency room or those that are doing intake, what is so important at that first line is for everyone to know at the point at which they see a fever, ask a travel history. And I'm mentioning it here and in this call and in this conversation because we want to use every means we can by which we communicate to help address some of the educational issues that have been raised.
Next question, Holly.
Thank you. That comes from Julie Steenhuisen with Reuters. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for this call. I'm trying to understand what kinds of, it sounds like the PPE that was worn by these two healthcare workers was not necessarily the same kind, but what were they actually wearing? Were they, you know, there have been some reports that their necks were exposed, for example. Were they wearing, you know, full body suits, or were they just wearing gowns and gloves, single gloves or double gloves? I mean, it's a, you know, these questions are being looked at by a lot of other hospitals who are trying to decide how to protect their own staff. So it's really important to know exactly what they were wearing, and you know what people can do.
So, when we've reviewed the records for the first several days of the patient's stay before he was diagnosed, there we see a lot of variability in the use of personal protective equipment. And when our team arrived the same day the patient was diagnosed, we noted, for example, that some healthcare workers were putting on three or four layers of protective equipment in the belief that this would be more protective, but other things were done, such as taping parts of the protective gear, again, in the belief that this would be more protective. And we certainly understand the fear and the anxiety that's normal and understandable. These are good, dedicated people who worried about themselves and their families, and they were trying to protect themselves better. But in fact, by putting on more layers of gloves or other protective clothing, it becomes much harder to put them on, it becomes much harder to take them off, and the risk of contamination during the process of taking these gloves off gets much higher. That's true for several different areas of the body. I think, you know, more broadly, if I could comment, I know the issue of PPE has gotten a lot of focus. There are several right ways to do it. What we have always emphasized is that healthcare workers who are using familiar PPE in familiar ways are more likely to do it right. We're looking at this. We're working with the hospital, and we will absolutely look at what are the ways to provide the maximum possible support to healthcare workers and allow them to do their jobs by minimizing their risk of contamination. I don't know if Secretary Burwell would like to add anything.
No, thank you, Tom.
Next question, Holly.
Thank you. That comes from Kelly Giblum with the Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. First of all, I was wondering which patient was going to be transferred from Emory and whether it was just one. Just want to clarify. And also, are there any other people who are healthcare workers who are among these that are currently being tested or currently being isolated or at the hospital with Ebola symptoms?
Thank you. Okay, they confirmed 72 nurses.
Mr. Frieden, do you want to answer that, or would you like
yes,
to?
Yes. So the second healthcare worker is the individual who is being transferred from Dallas to Emory, and we continue to assess anyone who has symptoms. We encourage people to come forward at the slightest concern. We have not currently identified anyone who we feel merits blood tests to see if they have Ebola. We are continuing to monitor closely. And as with many parts of this investigation and this response, this can change from minute to minute and hour to hour. Next question, Holly.
Thank you. That comes from Betsy McKay with the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks very much. Just a couple quick questions. Did you say the first patient will be transferred elsewhere, and if so, could you give us a little more detail on that? And secondly, I wanted to go back to the movement of the healthcare workers. Dr. Frieden, you said you'll ensure that none of the others who are being monitored will be able to travel. What powers are in place for that to happen, and what exactly are the rules and the legal authority right now to prevent them from going anywhere or leaving home or whatever the level of quarantine is?
With regard to the first patient, the report from the hospital is that she is in improved condition today. We will assess each hour, each day, whether that's the best place for her or somewhere else might be. In terms of controlled movement, that's something that we work out with the state and local public health authorities. Next question, Holly.
That comes from Janet St. James with WFAA-TV Dallas. Your line is open. Janet, please check your mute button. Your line is open.
Okay, Holly, let's go to the next question, please.
Thank you. One moment.
Holly, next question.
Yes, thank you. I apologize. One moment.
The demo? Holly, do we have questions coming?
Yes, we do, sir. Just one moment. I apologize. Levendera with CNN News, your line is open.
Dr. Frieden, two questions real quickly. Was there the protective gear that these healthcare workers were using, was there any skin exposed Some of the video that I've seen of healthcare workers in other parts are fully covered. Were these workers fully covered, or were there parts that were exposed? And the second question is, did the hospital not tell any of these healthcare workers to limit their travel, to limit their exposure with the public before today?
So, first, some of the forms of PPE used did allow exposure of some parts of the skin. We have discussed in detail, and there are right ways to do it, several different ways, including with exposure of some parts of the skin. The key is the adherence to protocol, and the problems that we have identified had to do with using PPE in unfamiliar ways. In terms of the travel, as I mentioned earlier, when the individual, the second healthcare worker, left for Ohio, the first healthcare worker had not been diagnosed. So all were under active monitoring, but all were under self-monitoring and were not being actively monitored because at that point it was not known that there had been exposures in the care of the first patient. I do want to mention one thing because I may not have said this earlier regarding the plane. The fact that the patient number two did not have a fever until the next day, did not have nausea or vomiting on the plane, suggests to us that the risk to any around that individual on the plane would have been extremely low, but we are going and will always put in extra margins of safety, and therefore, as Secretary Burwell said, we'll be reaching out to all of the passengers and crew of that flight.
Next question, please, Holly.
Yes, that comes from Brittany Hughes with CNS News. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good afternoon. In a video message to countries in West Africa that are experiencing Ebola outbreaks, President Obama told residents that they cannot get the disease by sitting next to someone on a bus. But CDC recommendations state that travelers in West Africa who begin to show possible symptoms or people who've experienced a high risk of exposure should avoid public transportation, including buses. And we've also seen large amounts of concern shown regarding potentially infected people traveling on airplanes. My first question is, did the CDC vet this video message before it was released and posted on U.S. Embassy websites? And is it true that a person runs absolutely no risk of contracting Ebola on public transportation such as a bus?
So, yes, CDC vetted the message, and yes, we believe it's accurate. I think there are two different parts of that equation. The first is, if you're a member of the traveling public and are healthy, should you be worried that you might have gotten it by sitting next to someone? And the answer is no. Second, if you are sick and you may have Ebola, should you get on a bus? And the answer to that is also no. You might become ill. You might have a problem that exposes someone around you. Because the risk is so low, we think there is an extremely low likelihood that anyone who traveled on this plane would have been exposed, but we're putting into place extra margins of safety, and that's why we're contacting everyone who was on that flight.
Next question, Holly. Holly, next question, please.
Yep, thank you. One moment.
Holly, next question, please.
Chris Perez with the New York Post. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Friedman. What sort of treatments will Vinson be receiving, and how is it possible for someone, how going forward will it be possible to stop people that treated Mr. Duncan from, you know, getting on public transportation?
So the treatment of both of the patients there is as per their treating physicians, and that information has to be from the hospital there. In terms of controlled movement, that's something that we work out with the state and local public health authorities. At this time, we require anyone who may have been exposed to travel by controlled movement only. The healthcare worker number two, who traveled from Ohio on the 13th of October, Monday, should not have traveled, should not have been allowed to travel by plane or any public transport by virtue of the fact that she was in an exposed group. And although she did not report any symptoms and she did not meet the fever threshold of 100.4, she did report at that time that she took her temperature and found it to be 99.5. So by both of those criteria, she should not have been on that plane. I don't think that changes the level of risk of people around her. She did not vomit. She was not bleeding. So the level of risk of people around her would be extremely low, but because of that extra margin of safety, we will be contacting them all.
Holly, we'll take two more questions, please.
Marcia Kodorova, your line is open. Please state your affiliation. Marcia, your line is open.
All right, Holly, we'll go to the next question, and we'll make that the last question, please.
Thank you. One moment for the next question. Alex Altman with Time Magazine, your line is open.
Thanks for doing this call. You've noted that a site manager, installing a site manager, is a very important element of containing this virus. If that's the case, why was one not immediately installed in Dallas when Mr. Duncan was diagnosed?
That's certainly something we will make sure happens for any future case of Ebola in this country. I'll just maybe perhaps Secretary Burwell say one or two words, and then if you want to make any concluding remarks.
Please, Tom.
So just to recap, Ebola is hard to fight, but we know how to fight it, and we know how to beat it. The situation changes every day. We're always going to be open with what we know and share more rather than less. We're going to put in an extra margin of safety to protect Americans. This second healthcare worker case is very concerning. Our thoughts are with the individual and the individual's family. The investigation is identifying additional healthcare workers who will be very closely monitored, and we are planning for the possibility of additional cases in the coming days. Secretary Burwell?
Thank you, Director Frieden. I would just close by saying that this is an effort that is focused both on the priority of our homeland protection and making sure that people are prepared and safe here in the homeland, and that's a cross-government effort, whether that's HHS working across all of the parts of HHS. The question of drugs or therapeutics or any of those things came up. FDA is working deeply on that. Our Assistant Secretary for Preparedness is assisting in those efforts. It's also across the government. We're working with the Department of Homeland Security closely. And then there is the part of fighting this effort in West Africa. And again, a cross-government full effort. And whether that's the engagement of the President in terms of other leaders, to the State Department, to USAID, to the great work that DOD is doing on the ground as well. So I would just close by saying this is something that we prioritize our homeland preparedness and at the same time want to get at the root of the cause of the Ebola epidemic in West Africa.
Thank you, Secretary Burwell. And Holly, this concludes our call. Reporters wanting additional information or having questions can call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. Thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude the conference. You may disconnect at this time.